Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again.
Unbelievable.
Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe in myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome to The Last Round, episode 219. And today's special guest is Abraham Gonzalez, contributing writer for Pro Box TV and formerly, last time he was on, of NY Fights. Thanks for joining me, Abe.
Hey, man. I appreciate you having me on the show once again. Excited to do this.
Just tell us about the departure from NY Fights and the big opportunity at Pro Box TV.
Yeah, so I was the managing editor at nyfights.com for some years. Then I went to bigfightweekend.com for a little bit, for a couple months. But then I had the opportunity to work with, all the folks at ProBox TV on the news section. And so, I just started actually today. So this is like fresh news. I dropped my first article today. Just a little bit of a live stream fight card update, along with this, with some betting odds. But yeah, Pro Box TV, and I still contribute for Fanside MMA as well.
A few small names in the boxing world in Pro Box TV, you know, Malignaggi, Marquez, Chris Algieri.
Yeah, just a couple.
Well, that's good to hear. That's good to hear, Abe, that you've moved on to Pastures News somewhere big. I'm looking forward to you coming back to Cali later in the year.
Yeah, I am too. I do miss the weather, although you guys haven't had the best of weather this year. But I'm sure that when I come back, it'll all be good again.
That is true. Well, jumping straight into the fight reviews. Saturday, the 29th of April from College Park Center, Arlington, Texas on DAZN. William Zepeda moved to 28-0 with a KO2 over Jaime, Arboleda?
Arboleda, yeah.
Dropped to 19-3. Arboleda was down three times in round two. What did you think of Zepeda?
William Zepeda is the real deal, right? He is a guy that everyone needs to start watching. If you're not watching him, start watching him. El Camarón is the real deal. And he is going to be part of the next wave of lightweights that will make things fun and entertaining in the future. I think that once, you know, the Devin Haney's and, he moves on and, you know, those belts get split up again, if he beats Lomachenko, right? Or if Lomachenko wins, you know, maybe that's a good fight in 2024. But either way, I think William Zepeda in between 12 and 18 months will be contending for a title at some point.
El Camarona, the shrimp?
The shrimp, yeah. Unless it means something else. But that's what I know that it means. It means the shrimp.
And in your boxing experience and speaking Spanish, why would you call yourself the shrimp?
I don't know. That could be, you know, some kind of like a personal joke or something like that, you know, amongst himself and the family or in the gym or whatever. And he might have done something stupid and they might have said, you know, Camarón, and it just stuck.
I think Zepeda, especially at lightweight, he's going to be a handful for anybody, because somebody who punches as hard as he does and throws as many punches as he does, it's a tough task. It's a tough task.
Yeah, so if you notice that first round, when he landed his first clean shot on the button, it staggered him, Arboleda. Like, the first time he hit some club flush, he hurt him. And I was like, wow, okay, like, this guy, you know, he's really showing his his power here. I think that right now the best thing that they can do is capitalize off of that momentum, put him in with a Fortuna or Morcito Hesta, you know, do a Southern California fight there, you know, kind of build that momentum, and then maybe do a Kambosos fight next year. And then, you know, if he's successful after that, you know, then he fights for a title.
I think you hit the nail on the head there, because if I remember rightly, Zepeda beat Jojo Diaz. Jojo Diaz then went and fought Hester, lost to Hester. So Hester and Zepeda, both Golden Boy, easy to make, in-house fight, whilst Devin Haney's got the titles and fighting Lomachenko. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, yeah, let's do it. I mean, I think that's a summertime in either Carson, you know, California at the Dignity Health, or you do it as a main event, you know, at the Fantasy Springs. But let's get it going.
Yeah, we just did Golden Boy's job from there, I think.
Yeah, and you can send a check to I'll play.
Moving on that card, we have Victor Morales moved to 18-0 and one draw with a KO2 over Diego De La Hoya, who dropped to 24-2. This was for the vacant WBA Intercontinental Featherweight title. Good performance from El Tornado.
Yeah, Victor Morales, man, he Victor Morales Jr., he did his thing. You know, he asked for the Diego De La Hoya fight. He got it. He wanted to prove something, not only to the fans, but to himself, that, you know, he was ready for that type of level fighter. And again, another guy that you want to capitalize off his momentum and, you know, and get him back in the ring as soon as possible. Like, let's not keep him on the shelf 8-10 months. Like, let's bring him right back in the summertime.
What did you think of Diego De La Hoya coming into this fight? He had a bit of a layoff. He didn't look like he'd, maybe I'm being a little bit harsh, but he was a little bit soft around the waist, shall we say?
Yeah, I think that Diego De La Hoya needs to sit down and ask himself some real hard questions, or bring in the closest people to him and have that conversation. He's either going to you know, dedicate himself or rededicate himself, maybe drop down a weight class or two and try it out. Or if he doesn't think that he can still put in the effort, then maybe he should just hang it up and, you know, maybe consider going into becoming a trainer or whatever the case may be, if that's what he wants to do. Hopefully he's put away some money and, you know, doesn't continue to fight because he has to.
Yeah, because he's only 28, and if you rewind it back to 2017, he had that great victory over Randy Caballero.
Yeah, but this is the thing. Sometimes people, they get comfortable, man. They get comfortable, and, you know, it isn't until things are on the brink of going crazy, right, or really bad for you that you start to – that's when you start to realize, oh, you know what? I need to really, like, take this seriously. If not, I can get hurt. Or, you know, hey, I just don't have the desire to get up in the morning and do this every single day. You know, I want to do something else. And if that's the case, that's okay. No shame in that, right? There's no shame in that. But don't put yourself in a position where you could potentially get hurt if you're not taking it seriously.
And since we're playing matchmaker today, where would you go next with Victor Morales Jr.?
Ooh, I'm trying to think. Man, we're talking, I might have to look up some names because, you know, there's so many different guys moving up and down everywhere between 122 and 130, it seems like. I would have to really look and see. No name comes up to me right now, but I would, if there's going to be somebody, it would have to be in the top rank side. And, you know, Golden Boy does do business with top rank. So,
remember Christopher Diaz,
Pintufo.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good fight. I think he was, what was he doing?
He fought Dog Bay back in 2021. He had one victory last year. He's ranked 25th in the world on
boxing. Yeah, but there was some news about him recently. But what about a Ruben Villa or Joey Gonzalez? Those fights, Josh Warrington, I like
Ruben Villa. The only thing with, I mean, you've got to challenge yourself at some point. I just thought Joette maybe had a little bit too much experience for Victor right now. But Ruben, I could see that one.
Or somebody like Arno Kagagi.
That's a tough fight. You're going to get rounds.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, all those type of fights up and down the I-5 would be okay.
Yeah. No. I like it. Right. Nothing else to review for that weekend. Yeah. So let's go on to the big preview for this week. Saturday, the 6th of May from the Estadio Akron from Jalisco on DAZN pay-per-view. Saul Canelo Alvarez returns 58-2-2 up against John Ryder, 32-5 for the undisputed super middleweight titles of the world. Right, Abe. So going in, what do you think of this fight? Do you get the big fight feels now that we're pretty much hitting fight week?
No. I think that we all know what this is, right? But this is boxing, and boxing could potentially, or not potentially, but boxing often throws us some curveballs and things happen, right, that we don't expect to happen. I don't think that this is going to be one of those nights, but you just never know. And I think that everyone is more concerned with what's next after this than anything else. Now, but I'm going to throw it back to you, though, for you to tell me why people should even care about John Ryder, because not a lot of folks know anything about him on this side of things, right, of the globe. But, you know, you being from across the pond, you know, maybe you might know a little bit more than the average Joe.
I think the only thing going for John Ryder in terms of, you know, why he should be there is he's kind of done it the hard way. You know, he's worked his way up several times, got up to British level, lost, had to go back, rebuild. And, you know, he did that. And there was even times that I heard that he was looking at retiring, you know, wife, kid. And then, you know, money wasn't coming in. You know, the boxing wasn't working out at that point in his life. And he looked at doing like security and stuff like that and getting like a full-time job and maybe stepping away. But, you know, he kind of stuck at it, and he had that, like, this is really kind of his, you know, Rocky Balboa style moment where he's taken those losses, he's come back, he's rebuilt, he's believed in himself, and now he's got that big stage, that big payday. I don't think many of us think he's going to win, but he's going to get paid handsomely where, you know, if he doesn't kind of waste it, he should be set for life, and maybe even his children will be set for life as well from the payday he's probably going to get for fighting Canelo. But I'm not going to lie to you and sit there and tell you that I think he's going to win the fight.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either. I mean, this is the grand homecoming for Canelo Alvarez. He's been wanting to do this for a long time. I don't know if you remember that at one point he wanted to fight Triple G, either the second or the third one in Mexico, right? Like, he wanted the big show, not the wrestler, the big show, but the big show, right? He wanted to have the glamour and the glitz and the Mexican, you know, people chanting his name and all that. Like, he's been wanting this moment for a long, long time. Almost similar to when Julio Cesar Chavez fought at the Aztec Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Some years ago, where that was like the grand moment. There was a bunch of people. It was like 100,000 people or something like that. Something ridiculous. I think that because, you know, he was a kid at that moment, he probably told himself that he would always want to have that type of moment if he made it, right? And so I think this is it for him.
Do you think that the Canelo star is waning? Because, like you just touched on, this fight isn't giving you the big fight feels like it was. The Triple G trilogy wasn't really as big as we thought it was. The Dmitry Bivol fight wasn't really as big as it was. Or is it just a bad selection of dance partners?
I think for the American boxing fan, it's kind of like, okay, they're kind of getting over the Canelo thing. Now, on the Latin American, in the Latin side of, you know, whether it's media and culture and everything else, like, he is larger than life. So everything and anything that he does or he is in whether it's a fight or whatever, they're going to, I mean, he's going to be, every 5 minutes they're going to be mentioning. So that hasn't stopped for him on that end. On the American fan side, yeah, I think we're moving past it a little bit. And I think that they're looking for that next star. And they might have found one 2 weeks ago in Las Vegas, right? But yeah, I think that it's passing a little bit on the American side. Latin America, I think he's still one of the biggest names out there. You know, he has Julio Cesar Chavez type fame with the culture. So yeah, I think that's never gonna die down, even when he retires. Like he's gonna be the Mike Tyson, you know, that type of effect where people are never going to not want to see him do something.
Looking at the fight itself, this is Canelo's 63rd fight. Looking at his last two performances, obviously the loss to Dimitri Bivol, and then I think people weren't overly impressed with his performance against Triple G due to the fact he dragged Triple G up to 168. Do you think Father Time is catching up with him?
I would have to say so. Yeah, I think a little bit. He would probably say no, of course. But, you know, that many fights, you know, he is a little bit, I think, he's like 33 or something like that. But he's a little older than that, right? He's an older 30 plus. So I think that the wear and tear is definitely catching up to him. He's had more surgeries, you know, as of the last couple of years than he's had ever, it seems like. So I think it is catching up to him a little bit. And that's probably why he wants some of these like legacy fights, and you know, trying to capture, you know, more gold at different weight classes and stuff like that. So, I if he's gonna fight Bivol again, I don't think he's gonna be at 168. He'll probably fight him at 175, because then, you know, he'll keep his belts intact if he loses again. But if he says, hey, let's do 168, and takes that chance, man, more power to him. I'd be really interested.
Just to put it into perspective, like you said, he turned pro in 2005, and his pro debut was against, do you know?
No.
You should. Abraham Gonzalez.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Somebody was teasing me about that so long ago. Yes, 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 yes. I do remember that now. Yep. That is a fact. Yeah. And I promise you folks, it wasn't me.
No, that just shows you that, look, he's been a pro for 18 years. So like you say, those last two performances could be, you know, by the time catching up with him. And it could be a fight like this where John Ryder is just there, the right place at the right time. Canelo's coming back from, you know, operation on his hand, I believe. Some not the best Canelo performances against, obviously, Triple G and Dimitri Bivol. So every dog has his day, right?
Yeah, and it takes a lot out of you, man. Listen, I've been in the Marine Corps for 25 years, and last couple years the surgeries and the injuries have been stacking up one after the other. Your body can only be working so hard at a certain level for so long before it starts breaking down, just like a car engine, right? And so there's nothing wrong with that, but I think Canelo is starting to break down a little bit, and you know, the wear and tear is starting to catch up to him.
Do you think, with how professional Canelo is, but the fact that this is the big homecoming, like you said, do you think that'll give him added pressure? And due to the fact that he's a massive favorite going into the fight?
Nah, a guy like that at this level, I think that he's numb to pressure. Honestly, you know, I think that, he is going to maybe feel like he needs to do something spectacular early. But if it's not there early enough and he doesn't see it, then he's going to just revert right back to what he knows, and then let the opportunity present itself if it does.
Obviously, we have John Ryder, you know, coming up this weekend, September, looking like, what from what Canelo says, is probably going to be Dimitri Bivol. May next year, I would imagine David Benavidez. And then what? I think we're kind of running out of opponents.
Yeah. No, I guess it just really depends, right? At that point, maybe he moves up and fights Better Biev at that point, right? Because Better Biev will probably be like 41, 42 at the time, right? That's if he doesn't lose to Bivol. Maybe you try to see what's at 175 that you could potentially obtain a title there. Or if Badou Jack is still the cruiserweight champ, you know, maybe you fight Badou Jack next year, right? And just go for another title. Who knows? But I think that he is going to be smart about it and just look at what opportunities are available. And he's not going to do anything different than any other fighter has done in years past. And all the superstars have done it towards the end of their careers. And he's going to be no different.
You think that Canelo is still underrated due to the fact that, like, we talk about pound for pound and, you know, the mythical matchups and stuff like that, but he's actually tried to do it in real life. You know, he's tested himself against these bigger guys at higher weights. Okay, you know, he's stuck in clauses now and again for the rehydration to kind of make it safe for himself, because then he's not fighting a legit giant. But I think, you know, because of the fact he did it with Bivol and he was beating so convincingly, I think now some people maybe actually underrate him.
Yeah, I don't know if I would say underrated. I think a lot of people aren't giving him his just due or have taken that away from him. And I don't think that that is fair, because he's taken on the biggest challenges, right? Yeah, he went through his row of not so great fighters, but it's not his fault that they had the title, right? So, hey, they had the title. They, you know, they were okay. But he went and got the title. Not his fault. And I'm sure if it was somebody else that was there, he would have fought that person too, because he was on a mission to become undisputed. And I can respect it. I think that people are, they forget things quickly. And, you know, you could be hot today and not so hot tomorrow. So I think it's just a little bit of that.
I assume you're going for a Canelo win.
Yeah, absolutely. I think mid to late stoppage.
Yeah, I agree. I think a late round stoppage, I think John Ryder, unfortunately, is kind of a man-made opponent for someone like Canelo, because I think John's probably going to go in there. I don't think he's going to try to outbox him. I think he's going to stick to his very compact, kind of aggressive come-forward style, which is kind of tailor-made for someone like Canelo. Which will be a perfect homecoming for him, unfortunately for John. And I could actually see him maybe retiring afterwards. He's got that
100%. I think that John Ryder rides off into the sunset after this.
Yeah, I believe so. I think he's got there. He's taken the long, winding, hard road to get there. He gets paid. You know, kind of finish on top. Even if you lose, you're still finishing on top in a fight like that against someone like Canelo.
100%. Yeah.
Next up on that card, we have Julio Cesar Martinez, 19-2 against Ronald. I think it's Batista, who's 15-2. This is for the WBC flyweight. A return for Julio Cesar Martinez. Hopefully a little warm-up fight before we see him in there with someone like Sonny Edwards in the future.
Let's hope he makes weight.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that is true.
Let's hope he makes weight. Let's hope that we get the fight period. And with him, he's just, you just never know what you're going to get with him. Right. And I feel like maybe he gets past this and then, you know, he'll go and get the Sonny Edwards fight or the Bam Rodriguez fight. And then he comes in overweight for one of those. I don't know. Like this guy, I don't know what to think of his career. It's almost like he's had this roller coaster ride that he is unaware that he's in. I don't understand it. I don't understand how he continues to have these lapses in judgment.
The Martinez-Edwards fight is one of those ones where marinating has gone wrong. Because when they first spoke about it, it would have been a good fight to do. You know, Sonny Edwards' brother had that, you know, defeat to Martinez. Martinez at the time, I think, only had one loss. And then they made it, but they tried to marinate it. Obviously, Sonny Edwards at the time was with Probellum. He wasn't with Matchroom like he is now. So he probably didn't want to make it then. But obviously, Martinez has lost to Chocolatito since then. He's had those several fights fall out with, you know, Williams Arroyo. And then obviously now in most people's minds, that loss to Sonny Edwards' brother, it's kind of gone. You know, that's so long ago, we don't really think about it. So I think that's kind of marinating gone wrong. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, again, let's see if we actually make it to the fight.
Well, I'm a big fan of Martinez when he does fight. He does have a very fan-friendly style, so hopefully he gets the win. And then we can see, you know, Sonny Edwards is fighting in the not-too-distant future. Hopefully he gets the win, and then we see those two in the ring at some point towards the end of the year.
Yeah, yeah, because I don't think we're going to see Bam until later this year. And if we do, it's going to be, you know, kind of like a tune-up, because I don't think he's going to go right into like a unification fight coming off of a broken jaw. I don't know. Maybe he does, but I don't think he will.
No, you've got to give him that, right? He's got to get in there. He's got to have that self-belief, right? Get him in there, let him take a few shots on it in the smaller gloves. So then, you know, when he's in back into the big fights, you know, he's got that, he's comfortable in there without having to worry about, you know, getting hit and whether the jaw is going to stand up.
Yeah, he's a tough kid, man. So, hey, listen, anybody who fights Sarung Vasai is a certified tough dude. Plain and simple. Like, that's it. You know, he fought Sarung Vasai. Hey, I don't care who else he fights. In my book, Bam is one of the toughest dudes out there, period.
Yeah, last year was his year.
Yeah, yeah.
Look at the guys he fought over the last like 18 months or so. Okay,
if he would have just had a little bit of a better performance in that September fight, yeah, he would have won the fight of the year.
Yeah, no, it's true. But you kind of give him a little bit, right? He's still,
of course,
still young, and you know, like you say, like styles make fights, and sometimes styles make bad fights, you know. Or some people just get in there and they realize that, okay, this dude's good. Like, I'm not opening up. I'm not giving him an inch. I'm just going to see out the 10, 12 rounds, get my paycheck, and run off to another fight.
That's right. That's right.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Also on the card, Gabriel Golas Valenzuela, 26-3-1, is in against Steve Spark, 16-2. This is for the WBA Intercontinental Super Lightweight title. What do you think of this one, Abe?
Oh, man. Honestly, the only other fight that I'm concerned with on this card is the nail. That's it. Like, I'm not, like, super invested in these other fights. I'm just like, you know, I'll just muscle through with them. But, like, honestly, the only one is the nail. I want to see him and see what he looks like, because he has a very interesting story. A very interesting comeback, I should say. One that I think I'm going to get into this week on Pro Box news, and I'm going to write it up, because I think he has good timing, let's just say. And I'm going to go with that.
Well, let's turn our attention to that one. Like you said, the nail is back, 18-1 against Richard Blotnick's 19-6-1. UK listeners know Blotnick's. He's had a lot of fights with a lot of the guys over in the UK. The nail is back, obviously, after being WBC champion. Lost the title, what was it, 2 years ago?
No, it was longer than that.
Sorry, 2019. He got a TKO in the 10th round against Ada Bedabiev.
That was 4 years ago.
Yeah. So the story I saw, I mean, I was at his comeback fight. Was in February of this year. I was there. He won a 6-round decision on a Marv Nation card in Pomona. Pretty much said that he retired due to COVID came. He had several fights delayed, had no idea when he was going to come back. He had some investments over in the Ukraine that were doing pretty well, earning him good money. You know, he had a young family. He's kind of like, you know, how much do I need it? He's like, okay, I'm just going to step away. I'm going to retire. And then those investments weren't going great due to COVID. So he jumped back in, started sparring with Canelo and Zerto Ramirez. And then they pretty much turned around for him and said, like, hey, you've still got it, dude. Like, you could still do a bit. Eddie Reynoso signed him up, jumped to the chance. Eddie signed him up and is also coaching him, Abe?
I think so. I haven't deep dived into it, but I think he is.
I think he's either coaching him or he's kind of like co-coaching.
Like managing him, I think, mostly.
Yeah. So he came back in Pomona, did it pretty much. It's just, you could see that he was just kind of going through the motions, kind of. He wanted to do all six rounds instead of kind of get the guy out of there just to get the old engine going again, you know, oil that engine. You know that, Abe, after what you just touched on about the body, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good to see him back. And I think this one is going to be one of those ones where you get in there against Bolotniks. He's not going to lie down for you. So
I think this is the fight that tells him where he is, right? Whether he'll be ready for another title run or not. I think this is the fight that will tell him that.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with that. It's a good fight, and it's an interesting division. You know, if he comes back and he looks good against Bolotniks, you know, I think he's about 35, 36 years old. So he's probably got a year, 2 years, something like that in him.
Yeah, but he's 36, but, you know, 4 years of no wear and tear, right? So he's really like 32 in boxing, you know, as a boxer. And so I think that, you know, he can still go a little bit longer, and not, because he had that 4 year gap.
It's going to be interesting, because, you know, if he comes back and, you know, does well against Bolotniks, or, you know, Golovkin's out of there, then does he just skip the rest of the division? Does he just go straight to the top? You think the WBC or one of the sanctioning bodies will let him?
I think not until he probably gets like one or two more fights, and they may start looking at him like, all right, we need to bump him up.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting division. You know, he's a good fighter. He's a good champion for a long time. And I think everyone wanted to see that stylistic matchup with Bivol.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, yeah. And that's something that I wanted to get into right there. When I write it up, is I think that's what he's looking at, right? I don't think he's looking at a better be a rematch. More so, I think his style meshes with Bivol more than anything else. And that might be the fight to make.
I wonder if Canelo brought him in to mimic Bivol.
Yeah, that could be it. But also, you know, he hits hard too. They don't call him the nail for nothing. So, yeah, I mean, who knows? Who knows? Canelo, Eddie Reynoso, those guys are smart guys. They haven't been in this business this long, not making smart decisions. So.
And when you think back to it, you know, the fight that he had with Adonis Stevenson was obviously when, you know, the tragedy happened to Adonis Stevenson. And, you know, when you've gone through that, I'm sure that's probably one of the reasons at the time that, you know, the nail probably thought to himself, you know what, COVID's coming, I'm gonna step away, you know, when you've gone through something like that in one of your actual fights.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like he took a real beating on that better be it. If he got beat up. And when you get beat up like that, not so much like in the face, but like on the body, and, you know, your insides are feeling different. It makes you want to reevaluate some things, right? Makes you say, you know what, maybe I should take a step back for a minute and look at something else. And not only that, but, you know, he's got a family, right? You know, his family probably said, hey, you know, wife was like, you know, why don't you know, we made some good money here. Why don't we try doing something else for a little bit? And if it doesn't work out, you could always come back.
100%. Also that weekend from Birmingham, England, on Sky Sports, we have Joshua Buatsi making his boxer debut. He's 16-0 up against, I think it's Paul Stepan, who's 18-0-1. Joshua Buatsi back at last. Somebody that definitely has not jumped on the momentum after, you know, turning professional after a good time as an amateur. What's your look as from the US side on him, Abe?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like he's one of those guys where I got to drink a large cup of coffee before I jump. You know, he just needs to be, he needs to do more exciting things in the ring, especially in that weight class. So let's see if, and maybe it could have been his own situation and he just wasn't happy and all that other stuff. You know, a lot of things go into it, right? Let's see what he does with this debut with Boxer and what he's going to do. Is it? I haven't seen anybody pick that up yet. Do you know if anyone's picking it up? Because I haven't seen it.
No, normally the only ones that normally do is, you know, like ESPN Plus or sometimes Pick It Up, Fight TV, something like that.
Yeah, like Pro Box picked up the Okali fight, I believe, last time.
Oh, okay, that'd be cool then, you know, somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I guess if nobody picks it up, then we'll just have to wait until the press release comes out and let us know who won.
The only thing that is kind of like a red flag, maybe, or maybe I'm looking too much into it or just reading it wrong, is every time Buatsi gets a fight against somebody big, it falls through due to injury. But then his comeback fights against the smaller, kind of like weaker, lesser opponents, he never gets injured. He always gets in and fights those guys. But when he's matched up with someone, we're like, okay, at last, this is his step-up fight. You know, we're going to see the real Buatsi. This is what everyone's been talking about for so long. Because you can only be a 30-year-old prospect for a certain period of time.
30-year-old prospect it is. Yeah, he's going to have to figure it out. But Boxer is willing to take the chance on him, right? So good on them. Was it Ben Shalom, I think it is? Yeah. You know, he's trying to do some things out there and, you know, got the Sky deal, if I'm not mistaken, right? So, I mean, good for him for getting stuff together and giving this guy another opportunity on his network and or his promotion and seeing what's up.
Yeah, I mean, I hope we get a good performance from Buatsi, because just looking at just the light heavyweight scene at, on the British side of things, Callum Smith, Dan Aziz, Anthony Yard, Joshua Buatsi, you know, just to name a few, you know, Craig Richards, Lyndon Arthur, you could just have a round robin of British fights where they'd all get paid well. There'd be big fights on Sky Sports or DAZN in the UK. You know, they don't even need to come over here and test themselves, you know. So they all need to just kind of put the pride aside, look at, like, you know, we're not getting any younger. Let's just do it.
Especially with Anthony Yard coming off of that, you know, brave performance, right? And people like, yeah, you know, he lost, got stopped, but, you know, how brave was he, you know, and some of the success that he had, and, you know, people would tune in to watch him again, right? So, yeah. You know, maybe fighting him, right? And getting that, I'm sure that'd be a big, big fight in the UK.
Oh, it'd be huge, because they're both, he's Anthony Yard's 31. Buatsi's 30, and then how old is, like, Dan Aziz is 33, so they're all of them are, you know, kind of getting to that kind of like middle part of their career where they're probably, you know, pretty much finished growing. They're going to learn all they're going to learn, you know. They should be really be hitting the peak of their career. So yeah, to me, that's just sad. I hope we start seeing those guys all fight each other.
Yeah,
right, nothing else to preview. Moving on to the news and the notes, and the biggest news from today: Ryan Garcia and trainer Joe Goosen have parted ways in the aftermath of the 7th-round KO loss to Gervonta Davis in Las Vegas. This is according to ESPN, but I saw Golden Boy retweet it. I've seen Ryan put it on his story on IG, so it looks like it's 100% true. What do you think of that, Abe?
I wasn't surprised that happened. Joe Goosen didn't attend the post-fight conference, media conference, press conference. So he was not there for that. That probably should have been the first signal that, you know, things were going in that direction. It just didn't seem like things were in sync for this training camp as maybe they were the first time. It was almost like, you know, when you get that that newlywed feeling, right? You know, everything was going well. You know, Joe Goosen was in San Diego, got a condo or something, and they were working out and things were going good. It just seemed like for the biggest fight of his career right now, Ryan and Joe just weren't in sync and they weren't on the same page. And that's weird. It's weird that they would be for a lesser fight, but for a bigger fight, they wouldn't be. I don't understand that.
I wonder if, kind of like a marriage, when Ryan had just worn him down, not listening, thinking he's right. I posted something because I listened to an interview done by Boxing Social, and I listened to it and I wrote it down word for word because I wanted to put the quote onto our Twitter. And I can't remember it word for word now, but I'll say what I can remember, that Joe Goodson says that you don't train Ryan Garcia, you collaborate with him because he has his own ideas, and 90% of the time his ideas come true. Something along the lines of that. And I posted that on our Twitter. And obviously everyone took that and they were just like, oh, okay, that's just like a fancy way of saying Ryan doesn't listen.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of reminds me of Miguel Cotto back in the day, right? Towards the end of his career, where he was kind of like dictating his own training camp for the most part. And guys were just kind of, you know, in the corner on fight night. I think it might have been something like that. I don't know. I'm a little baffled because, you know, Ryan has been wanting this fight for 3.5 years, maybe even longer. I think when I first saw him when he was 6-0, and I think he started talking about fighting Gervonta Davis when he was like 8-9-9-0. He's wanted this fight so long and so bad. And let me remind everybody that he was the only one that was really pushing for that fight and calling out Gervonta at every moment, right? Because none of the other 135 pounders were doing that. Let's just be clear about that. And, you know, he finally gets to this point and it just didn't seem like, I don't know, it seemed like the moment was too big for him. And seeing the All Access, the epilogue, and seeing some of the things that he was saying, his body language, it seemed like the moment was too big for him. Like he needed for Jamal Charlo to tell him that something about his fist feeling hard, for him to feel confident in himself that he was going to do something in the ring. And that was a little bit alarming right there. It just didn't seem like he was confident. And, you know, for Gervonta, because he had been in these main event situations for so long, he just seemed like it was another day at the office, really. And I think that was the difference. But going back to Joe Goosen, I don't understand it. And then I don't know where he goes from here. Who's going to take Ryan right now under those conditions? Freddie Roach ain't taking him. This kid, Manny Robles? I don't think he's going to take him. Robert Garcia, probably not. I mean, Robert Garcia ain't going to put up with that. I saw a post that I guess Coach Calvin Ford said he'll take him with open arms. I don't see Ryan going to no Baltimore. Like, nah, he ain't doing that. Or, you know, if they meet in Vegas or something like that, they it's just not going to happen. I don't know. I think that he goes back to his dad, right, and just does it that way, and then seeing if he can make it happen.
Do you know who I think he goes to?
Who's that?
And people listening to this, you can mark this. May the 1st, I come out with this crazy idea of what he does. But I think Ryan is kind of crazy enough to do this. I think he appoints his brother.
You know what? I wouldn't be surprised about that. Or a collaboration between his brother and his father.
Because his brother has been on his IG as Sean Garcia assistant coach.
Yeah.
And I think to keep, because he doesn't listen and stuff like that, and obviously Sean's career as a boxer kind of went down the pan, didn't it really, to be honest with you. He'll probably say like, oh, who knows me better than my brother? He already does pads with me all the time on IG to keep the money in the house, so, you know, so it's not going to some trainer outside. I think he'll use that. He'll be like, yeah, who knows me better than my brother? I think he'll appoint Sean.
And Sean's been all over the place too. Like at one point he wanted to be a police officer, and then then he was going to do something else, and then he wanted to fight again, and I don't know. It just looked weird. It looked weird. And he looked scared in Javante's locker room when he was watching his hand wrap. He looked scared as hell. So I don't know, man. Like if I had the ability to appoint him to somebody, I'd probably tell Ryan to go down to Vegas and mess with Salas, you know, or Bob Santos or one of those guys, right? You know,
for California coaches, because his family are in California. I'll name a couple, and then you just tell me what you think.
Yeah,
Virgil Hunter.
Who?
Virgil Hunter.
Nah. Go ahead.
Sorry, someone Abel Sanchez, because you know Ryan likes a big one shot, kind of like Triple G.
I think that because Abel, I don't even think Abel Sanchez has any fighters anymore, right? I think because it would just be Ryan. I think that would be an opportunity there. I think that would work, but it'd have to be in Abel's terms, him going up to Big Bear and all that other stuff.
One that was all over Twitter, I'm sure you saw it, because everyone says that he needs a disciplinarian, Teddy Atlas.
Oh, Steve Kim said that. There ain't no way, because Teddy Atlas, the way he works is you have to go all the way up to upstate New York, I think is where his thing is at. And you have to be there the whole time, right? And Ryan ain't doing all that. But before even doing that, you have to get like an interview process with him. You know, Teddy Atlas is a madman, but you know, there's a method to his madness. That's just not happening, bro.
And then in a perfect world, who do you think he needs? Who do you think would be the best matchup for him if Ryan, you know, listened, knuckled down?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think a Bob Santos or Ismael Salas, like I think those two type of coaches would be good for him. Bring a little bit of different style, Cuban style, you know what I mean, with Salas. So I think that maybe some of those guys. But like if he wanted to really like, you know, take the gamble and wanted to, you know, to make that move or whatever, maybe a Calvin Ford wouldn't be such a bad idea, with Kenny Ellis down there at the Upton Gym in Baltimore. But, you know, Ryan would have to sacrifice something, you know, to do that. And whether he wants to do that at this point in his career or not, up to him.
One thing I do think about is if Ryan has had problem with coaches and not listening and stuff like that and kind of doing his own thing when he didn't have much money, now the fact that he just got paid 5, 10, 15 million, whatever he got paid due to the pay-per-view numbers doing really well, what's the chances of him listening now?
So let's take a step back. Ryan already had money.
I'm talking about at the start of his career, he's always had problems with coaches. Not just Joe.
Yeah. Because before this fight, I think they put his net worth at 20 million. You know, so he was already kind of like, you know, out there. I don't know. I think Ryan just got a lot of different things going on. And I don't think that there's anybody, I don't think he has anybody in his immediate circle that can mentor him like a big brother. Right. And I think Canelo was doing that. But then Ryan, you know, wanted more attention from Eddie and he couldn't give him that because he was working with Canelo and stuff. So, I just think he needs kind of like a big brother mentor, to just kind of be there for him because I think there's too many people that tell him yes.
I think if he keeps boxing, I think over time he'll just mature, won't he? You know, he'll get to like 26, 27, 28. Hopefully by then he'll look back on some of the mistakes that he's made and he'll probably have experienced a lot more over those next few years. And like everybody, eventually we mature and, you know, he'll probably settle down with some coach, you know, then. Do you think there's a chance he doesn't box again?
I think that he is going to give it a go for one more fight. But depending on the outcome of that will determine the answer to that question. And if he doesn't look good and he's heavily criticized for it, I think maybe at that point he looks at another avenue, maybe similar with boxing or, you know, or something along the lines with pop culture for him to, you know, continue to bring in that money and then kind of ride off to the sunset, you know, maybe make movies and shit like that.
Since we've match made everybody tonight and done Golden Boy's job, who would you think would be a good welcome to the 140 division for Ryan Garcia?
Ooh, so this is the thing. Golden Boy doesn't have a whole lot of solid 140 guys. You know what I mean? If you look up and down the list there, a lot of them are with the PBC and Top Rank. Now, if Ryan didn't want to waste any time and said, hey, I want a real, you know, test in the fall, I would put him with Arnold Barboza Jr. Yeah, Ryan against Arnold.
That's a tough test. But the only thing about Arnold is he does get hit.
Yeah.
He can get hit. So you could be losing 8, 9, 10 rounds to Arnold, but then you've just got that light out, you know, because he is, I mean, Ryan can punch. Ryan
can punch. So. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I would love to see that fight. I'm just looking here. I guess you could do the Jose Ramirez fight, right? I guess you could do that. That would be a good fight.
You're not giving him any gimmies to welcome to the 140 there, Abe.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I just don't see anybody else, you know, that's makeable, right? Because a lot of those other guys are with the PBC, and they're not going to do that. They're just not going to do it. So I'm looking at Top Rank guys that, you know, he can fight potentially.
Yeah, it's very light, the 140 for any Golden Boy guys.
I don't know, unless he fights what's his name? Is it Antoine Russell? Isn't Antoine Russell at 140?
Yeah, Gary Antoine Russell. Yeah, he's ranked number 5 by Boxrec.
Yeah, maybe a fight like that. But then again, PBC, right? You run into those problems. I don't see anybody at a lesser ranking than the other guys that I mentioned on the Top Rank side that he could potentially make, unless they tell Mercita Hester to come up to 140. So, you know, or Jojo Diaz or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, especially to see who gets, you know, picked as his next trainer, coach. And then when he's going to come back, is he going to come back and just be like, you know what, I'm just going to try to cash it out. I'm going to take the biggest fight I can for the biggest money at 140. Or does he, you know, choose a new coach, choose a nice little layup to a certain extent, so that you can see how him and the new coach gel, and then slowly but surely kind of work the way back up. I think when they pick the opponent, you can maybe kind of tell which way they're going to go.
Yeah. I think that he goes to the dad, bro. Like, I think he just re-injects his dad as the primary coach again. Woodsy mentioned something. Michael Woods, from NY Fights, he mentioned something earlier today that I caught on to when he wrote this piece about the Joe Goosen departure at the end. He says, he was like, he said, I picked up something which may or may not be pertinent, but he was like, Goosen was, would impart insight to Ryan Garcia between rounds, but he would look to Ryan's dad, Henry. He also told Henry to wait to let him finish a thought toward Ryan. Maybe Goosen felt attention because Henry was trained, you know, has trained Ryan since, you know, he was born or whatever. So there could be something there about that, right? You know, maybe his dad, you know, felt like, he needed to inject himself more because it was the biggest fight of Ryan's career. I don't know. The whole situation just seemed weird and not as focused as he needed to be. And then the whole rib situation, I don't even know what to make of that. You know, they pointed out the rib on the hot mic on the epilogue. So I don't know.
Also on the news and notes, former WBO light welterweight world champion, Mile High Mike Alvarado, lost on his BKFC debut. After the second round, the doctor called it a day due to cuts and injuries on his face and head. Did you catch it, Abe?
No, but I saw the highlights, and he looked like his face looked like hamburger meat. It's sad. I hope that he wasn't doing it because, you know, he needs the money. If he did, I hope that he made enough so that he doesn't have to continue to do that. But Mike Alvarado should have stopped fighting a long time ago. And the BKFC, you know, the bare knuckle, that's a tough gig. And I don't think that he should be doing that anymore.
Were you a fan of the bare knuckle?
I watch it every once in a while. I'm not a super fan, but I'm not opposed to it. I will watch it if it's on. I believe it or not, I would watch that before I watch the UFC or MMA. I just can't get into that stuff. But the BKFC, I'll watch it. So, you know, if it's on, I'll watch it and I'll catch it. They usually have some good entertaining action on there, and people get busy.
No, that's true. Yeah, the short rounds, short, fast rounds.
Yeah.
Jake Paul and his promotion are launching a new boxing series called Most Valuable Prospects. And this will highlight top up-and-coming fighters. The series will begin on May 26th in Orlando, Florida, and will be headlined by Ashton, is it Sylvie?
Sylvie.
There'll be four cards this year promoted by Most Valuable Promotions and Box Lab Promotions, which will all be on DAZN. Even more boxing, Abe. Even more boxing.
I like it. I like it. Basically, he's saying that he's getting into the club show business. That's all he's saying, right? He's doing club shows now. This is, I think this is the beginning of the transition of Jake Paul into strictly a promoter or event coordinator, basically, than a fighter. I think this is him planting the seed of that.
No, 100%. Yeah, I think his boxing career will probably die its death over the shortcoming year, 2 years or something like that. But look what him and Jake have done to make themselves celebrities on YouTube. Both of them know how to promote. So obviously Logan going into WWE, he's done amazing there. I can see Jake doing amazing in promotion in boxing and listening to all the fighters that have signed with him. I think due to the fact he was already wealthy, he takes a very small portion as a manager. So it's amazing for the fighters that he has.
Yeah, I think that, but that's why he's kept it boutique, right? He's kept it nice and boutique, kind of small. I think that with him, he's a smart guy, smart business guy, makes money with anybody and everybody, you know, ESPN, DAZN, whoever. And I think that he wanted to do it this way so that he can learn from his mistakes and do the mistakes at a small scale before eventually expanding it into a larger one.
Yeah, 100%. Kind of like little mini showbox cards, aren't they?
Yeah, 100%. You know what I mean? No different than the Golden Boy Fight Club shows that they used to do in downtown LA that we used to go to, right? Back in the day, so.
Some of those cards are honestly the best ones I go to because small, all the fans are pretty much diehard fans or the friends and family of the fighters. So there's a really good atmosphere compared to some of the bigger events where guys go just for a night out. They don't really know the fighters. Some of the best cards I've gone to in terms of atmosphere and action are some of the smaller cards.
Yeah, and those fights, I've seen Sinisi Estrada, you know, starting, Virgil Ortiz starting, Joshua Franco, all those guys, they all started in those type of shows. And, you know, and you get the best seats, right? Because it's a smaller venue and you get to see all the intricacies of things that they're doing. So I really enjoy it because then when they go to a larger scale, you know what to kind of expect and what to look out for.
Yeah. So anyone in those areas, any of those small areas, make sure to go to those club shows, nice and cheap. See some fighters that you can say in the future, like, hey, I saw that guy at the Avalon in downtown LA or somewhere like that.
That's right. That's a fact.
Well, Abe, you know, I appreciate you giving me an hour of your day, especially since you're on the East Coast, so you're 3 hours ahead. If you want to tell everybody where they can, you know, find your work, all the social media handles, anything you've got coming up.
Yeah, man. Listen, I appreciate you having me on the show. You can follow me on Twitter at AbeG718. Follow me on Instagram as well at AbeG718. I have work on fansidedmma.com, proboxtvnews.com. And yeah, just excited to see what the future lies. And I appreciate it again for you having me.
We are at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. And be sure to join us next week. I think the only big fight coming up next week is Jason Maloney against Vinston Astrolalibau in the Stockton Arena, Stockton, California. But from us, thanks, Gabe, and we'll catch you next time. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.